What if you could complete your MBA in just 1 year? Thanks to the College of Charleston School of Business, now you can. Their accelerated MBA program condenses a traditional two-year program into one rigorous year, ensuring you not only save a year of tuition and fees, but also re-enter the workforce quickly and graduate with critical business knowledge. U.S. News & World Report recognized the College of Charleston MBA as number one in the country for its job placement rate within 3 months of graduation. Learn more at mba.cfc.edu.
Opinions voiced in this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, and financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC.
Good morning, and welcome to Beyond the Business, brought to you by the College of Charleston School of Business. The College of Charleston School of Business, where students are beyond ready to work, they're ready to make an impact. Each Saturday morning at 9, successful business leaders and entrepreneurs from across the Lowcountry talk about what it takes to succeed in business and in life. Now your hosts of Beyond the Business, Eric Cox and Leslie Haywood.
And great Saturday morning, Lowcountry. Welcome to another edition of Beyond the Business, presented by the College of Charleston School of Business, where students are beyond ready to work. They're ready to make an impact. I hope you're ready to make an impact this morning for another edition of, again, Beyond the Business, heard here on 94.3. And also, in case you happen to miss one of our shows, simply go to our podcast on Spotify, iTunes, or at our website at coastalwm.com. Type in Beyond the Business, and you can check out all of our shows over the last 8 years. Leslie Haywood, our co-host, good morning to you this morning.
Good morning, Eric, and good morning, Lowcountry. Make sure and continue the fun beyond Saturday mornings, and follow us on our Facebook page at Beyond the Business or on Twitter at BTBCHS.
So, Leslie, the world wants to know, by the way. We're no longer just Lowcountry. We go all over the world. The world wants to know how drop-off at college went.
It was awesome. It was amazing. She is doing so good. And I came home and bawled like a 15-year-old after a first breakup, and then got that out of my system. And then it's been all good ever since. I mean,
Jason are doing okay now, right?
Me and Jason are doing okay. He had a hard time that next day too. Oh my God, he's gonna kill me when he walked down to the garage to see where her car should have been and realized it wasn't there and why it wasn't there. You're just like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I could do this. I'm like, well, it's done. So we can do this. We got one down, one to go. It was, we're so excited. She is rocking Clemson. In her words, I'm thriving is what she's saying. So
congratulations, and I guess go Tigers, right?
Go Tigers, yay!
Well, let's focus on the task at hand. Here we are again for another edition of Beyond the Business. People you know, stories you don't, and as we continue to do week in and week out, bring amazing stories from entrepreneurship around the globe, and certainly last week was no exception to that rule. We had Mr. Mark Marchant on, who is the CEO and principal of LS3P, which is a full-service architectural firm that serves the Southeast, and what an incredible, dynamic a speech and speaker that he was, but certainly the content that he brought, I thought was just very insightful. What was your biggest takeaway from Mark's story?
Well, with that whole segment, I love stories of leaders around the world. But of course, it does my heart good when we have those homegrown CEOs and entrepreneurs and they come chat with us. I mean, Mark, he's a James Island guy. He's a Clemson grad, and followed that life philosophy of working hard and staying humble. And it brought him all the way to the top of a really, really large company. And he actually interned in college at the company that he now runs. So it was so inspiring. What about you, Eric? What did you have?
You know, I loved it. You know, I'm a big quote guy. And one of the things he was talking about was when you don't win a project, you know, don't take it personally, take a learning lesson away from it, and then move on to the next opportunity. And, you know, have that thick skin. And, you know, we all want to win every time, but it just doesn't always work out that way. And I think he gave some really good insight to that thinking. So again, if you happen to miss Mark's show, just check it out on our podcast at Spotify, iTunes, or coastalwm.com. And what a great way to start your Saturday morning is to dive in. And we're going to, as we do, turn the page to another wonderful segment. And as we talked about, sometimes we're talking to CEOs and entrepreneurs in the Lowcountry, and sometimes we're branching out. And today we're going north, across the border to Canada. Here we are.
International.
From Toronto. That's right. Unfortunately, I will say, John, you are not the furthest reach we've had. We actually had a guest on from Antwerp, Belgium earlier. And so, but I don't think we've had a Canuck on.
Trumped by some guy in Antwerp? Is that what you're talking
about? How about that? All right. Yeah. But we have not had a Canuck on before, so we're excited to have you here. John Warlow, who, again, is the founder and CEO of the Value Builder System. And I'm telling you, folks, get your coffee ready, because this guy's all about entrepreneurship, how to create enterprise value in your business. And you're getting to hear him live here this morning on Beyond the Business. So we're excited, John. Welcome.
Hey, thanks, guys. Good to be with both of you.
So we know Leslie's going to take you down this path of the memory lane and all that good stuff. But before you do, just give our listeners a quick 20-second commercial on your organization, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I run Value Builder, which is a practice management software for advisors who want to work with business owners. And I'm also the author of a trilogy of books on entrepreneurship, Built to Sell, The Automatic Customer, and the new one's called The Art of Selling Your Business. That's me in 20 seconds.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I can't wait to get into all of that.
And John may be the first guest that actually did that in under 20 seconds. So we appreciate that, John. That was wonderful.
No, you're good. Oh, so let's get to know a little bit about the history behind the man. Where were you born? What was your upbringing like? Let's delve into a little bit of that.
I was born in England, actually. I was born in a little town called Bishop Stortford. My parents emigrated when I was five, and I was probably a bit of an outsider from the start, because I had a funny English accent, and that probably made me a bit of an anomaly in my, you know, class in Toronto. But yeah, I had a sort of a normal kind of childhood, normal Canadian, lots of, you know, hockey and snow. And
I was going to say, what does normal Canadian look like to us? Southern.
It looks cold. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, did you have brothers or sisters? And what did your parents do when they got here?
Yeah, I have a sister. You know, my dad was, you know, my dad was a company guy, worked at a big company for years. But I should give him more credit than I do for being the original entrepreneur in our family, because my family came over when my parents wanted to leave England. It was this 1970s. It was like crazy unemployment. There was like crazy taxes, and they wanted to move to a better life, which is, you know, the story of a lot of entrepreneurs. And my dad, not having a job or a house or anything, any place to live in Toronto, flew here. And he had 2 weeks to get a job and a house, because we came on a boat. And so my mom and my sister and I came across on this boat called the Stefan Batory. And we literally took 2 weeks to come across on this old Polish boat. And when we got here, my dad had found a place to live and a job. And so he is the ultimate and first time entrepreneur in our family, even though he went on to work in the same company for 30 years.
Oh my gosh. Talk about the pressure. I mean,
I know.
So what company? I know, right? What did he do? What company did he work for?
He was in the media business, so he did magazines and newspapers. The largest, sort of a Canada's equivalent to the Wall Street Journal, as a business newspaper at the time, called the Financial Post. So he published that, and then went on to do magazine publishing. So, you know, ran the largest magazine publishing company in Canada, actually. So all the big sort of magazines that would have equivalents in the United States that you probably never heard of, but the Canadian titles. So he did that for 30 years. Yeah.
So, John, give us a flavor as a youngster. What type of kid were you? Studious, into sports, troublemaker, all the above?
I was fat. And I think that was, like, all kidding aside, I was kind of a chubby kid. So I loved sports, but I never was the kid who was the popular kid. I was sort of a little bit on the outside, if that makes sense. So that was my upbringing until I was about 14 or 15. So I never felt, you know, I know we're talking about sort of business and entrepreneurship, and I think had I been the captain of the quarterback, like the quarterback of the football team kind of guy, I probably would have joined a corporate world. Like I probably would have had all those early signs of success. Like, oh, you know, as we all sort of give to the captain of the whatever team and the 6'2" person, none of which were me. And so I think I would have probably gone through a more traditional career path had I had those early affirmations. I didn't have those as a kid. So I was sort of the outsider. And I think if I'm psychoanalyzing my own journey. Well, I know that's your job, Leslie, but I think if I'm psychoanalyzing it,
Hey, you're making this easy on me. I'm fascinated.
No, I probably just went into entrepreneurship because I just didn't feel like the classic go to work at Procter and Gamble and, you know, climb the corporate ladder was the right journey for me. Where I was going to, you know.
It's funny. I do think that a lot of times us entrepreneurial people feel like outsiders. That is fascinating.
Have you ever looked at the height of entrepreneurs?
No.
Straight up. I wrote an article about this on Inc. I have no scientific research, but I want you to ask yourself the next 10 entrepreneurs you meet, successful entrepreneurs and people you've interviewed for the show, and find out how tall they are. Then do the same, like the one you had last week, of corporate executives who rise up to be the president, not owner, but presidents of the companies they work for. I bet you'll see a 4-inch gap between their average heights. Presidents of companies generally are 6'2". They command a presence. They have, you know, people, you know, if you look at even women who go on to have tremendous successful careers in corporate America are almost always quite tall. Not all. I mean, sure, there are examples that are not the case. But if you look at Christine Lagarde, the woman who runs the IMF, 6 foot in heels, men who run large companies almost always are tall. And if you look at entrepreneurs, if you want to look at any number, you know, Mark Zuckerberg as the most famous entrepreneur of our sort of 5'10". Tim Ferriss, arguably the most prolific entrepreneur in the kind of startup universe, 5'6", 5'5", 5'9". I don't know what the height is, but you will find that folks who are an outsider, didn't command a presence when they walked into a room, often choose entrepreneurship as a way to get ahead because they don't get the initial respect that is garnered to someone who's physically tall.
That is, wow. That is,
check it out. I mean,
heard a lot of perspectives on it. I don't think I've ever heard that particular angle on
that. Total sense.
I want you to now do a little survey.
Oh my gosh. Now I'm going to ask every guest because we're not in the studio anymore. I got to ask everybody how tall they are.
So I'm the 6'1 anomaly, evidently.
Yeah. Hey, but you did super good in corporate though.
I spent 20 years in corporate. So
there you go. Yeah.
I mean,
you know what happened? I got older and shrunk.
Now you're 5'10 on a good day, right?
So as you're going through high school and you're, you know, having, you know, these experiences and stuff around that time, what did you think your path was going to be? Were you college bound? You know, what started to become your passions in life, like high school and beyond?
Yeah, I think probably media because I was around it. My uncle was involved in television. My dad was involved in magazines. My mom worked in a book publishing company. So I felt like media was where I was going to end up. It didn't really occur to me that there's really any other kind of career that one would want.
Yeah, it sounds like the family business. Like,
yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
So give us a little sense of going through college, high school, those eras. What did schooling look like for you?
Sure. So I was like an average student and I went to a good school but took a crappy program. You know how there's like great universities out there like Harvard, you take business. I don't know what you take at Charleston. I'm sure there are great programs, engineering, et cetera, where it's a match between the college and the degree program is considered. I went to a school called Queen's, which is arguably one of the top schools in Canada, but it took arts. And that was a mistake because from the moment I got into school, it was a real, I just didn't identify with any of my classmates. I didn't really like, truth be told, it was a very left-leaning kind of group of teachers, and I just didn't have anything to do and I studied communications. I went to school for communications, and I had lived this life where, you know, my dad was in the magazine, you know, I had like lots of experience in media, and what these professors were kind of blathering on about is, you know, how corrupt the media is, and how, all of the sort of terrible sort of stereotypes of the media that we hear about. And I'm like, that's not what I've experienced for the last 20 years. Right. So I was the kid in class who was debating, who was telling the teacher, you have no clue what you're talking about. You've been spending way too long in a classroom. You should actually go do what you were claiming to teach. And I left. I left after 3 years, and I got communications was a 4-year degree, and I left because I hated it so much. And I thought my teachers were such idiots that I left, and I got a sociology degree because I had like whatever that number of credits associated with. So I'm not a big fan of formal education for that reason. I think if you go and you study something you're very deeply interested in, and it doesn't matter if it's business or science or whatever, great, have at it. But don't the badge value of this school, I'm not a big believer in, because I've lived, like Queens has no badge value where you are. It has a bit of badge value in Canada, but it was a garbage experience. I would never do that again. I would rather go study business at a crappy school than study something I wasn't interested in a prestigious school.
That is great advice, kids out there.
Awesome. Find something you're interested in, and you're like, regardless of where you're studying, don't fall in love with the logo on the sweatshirt, as they say.
So after graduation, what did you do after that? What was your first leap into adulting?
You can imagine, for real. You can imagine like a sociology grad with a 3-year degree that he left early from. It's not exactly like a high
highly
desire.
Marketable, right? Highly marketable.
Yeah, like I'm not going into corporate, you know. Anyway, so I, being interested in media, I wanted to, truth be told, my dad got me an interview at a competitive company to his, like, and they had, it was a big radio and magazine, and he got me like a contact in the HR department. It wasn't some like fancy, you know, connection. It was just like, go, you know, he probably bent somebody's arm and said, go talk to my kid. And they're like, there's no way you're working in Toronto, because Toronto would be like the equivalent of Atlanta in the South. It's the big media market, right? So
right.
You're like, show up and they're like, no.
Start somewhere else.
Yeah, you could go work in Sudbury, Ontario. So Sudbury, Ontario is a mining town in Northern Ontario. There's snow on the ground 6 months of the year. And you could fill in the blanks from there. But I took the job. It was like promotions coordinator in Sudbury, Ontario. Like I made $25,000 a year. One day I added up, like I kept running out of money at the end of the month. And I remember adding up, I had like a Honda Civic car payment. I had an apartment, and I added up all my expenses and then looked at my paycheck and realized that I was actually underwater. Like the longer I stayed in Sudbury, the more money I was actually going into debt, because I didn't have enough money to fund like a basic, like living independently. So anyways, that didn't last very long.
So how did you find your way out of that situation?
Your audience right now is going like, where did you find this dude? Like, he's a complete loser. Like, he's never actually accomplished anything in his life.
I promise, Low Country.
Next
we'll
week's
get to
show.
That.
That's next week's show.
Oh, next week's show. Walk back. Yeah. He's had a stripped career. Sorry. What did you ask her?
Just sort of, you know, coming out of that, what was the next move for you, and where did you start to actually get some footing and find your way?
So I was fascinated by entrepreneurs, and I listened to a bunch of entrepreneurial stories. How did they get to where they were, et cetera? And I pitched the station a show where we would interview a different entrepreneur every day and ask them how they made it. Like, if they knew now what they, if they knew then what would they know now, what they would they do differently?
So it was Beyond the Business before Beyond the Business.
This is it. You see, this
wow,
is like
this is ironic.
Years ago, right? You thought you guys were pioneers.
We did it, actually.
Anyways, the station said, that's nice. That'll never work. And so long story short, I was determined. So I left the station. I moved back to Toronto and I pitched it to a syndication company. A syndication company syndicates radio programming. And they said, let's give it a shot. And so I had a nationally syndicated radio show called Today's Entrepreneur for 3 years. It was nationally syndicated across Canada. And all I did was interview entrepreneurs and say, if you know now, if you know then, what you know now, what would you do differently? And I had a chance to interview like every Canadian entrepreneur that has ever done anything interesting. I got a chance to interview them, and it was like the best business degree you could ever possibly like imagine. And it was a great run. And that's how I started to kind of learn about entrepreneurship and stuff.
John, I have to jump in and ask you. So if you knew then what you know now, what would you do different?
Touche, my friend. I don't know, because I think I see myself coaching my own kids and trying to share a little bit about entrepreneurship with them. And of course, I talk a lot about, well, what does it cost to win a customer? And I think a lot of times I was the same way. I had this sort of, if you build it, they will come, the Field of Dreams, Kevin Costner kind of business model, right? Whereas like, if we build this great product or this great restaurant or this great studio, customers will come for sure. And so what I've learned now is that at least half of a successful business is like, how do you win a customer? How do you make that economical and then underwrite the cost? So it's something that I would probably start to think more about. And that played out in lots of different ways over the different companies I've owned.
So in those early years, what was maybe a mistake that you made in starting your company and really trying to build it? Something that, yeah, you could say to our listeners, yeah, don't do
yeah,
that.
I mean, yeah, it picks up on what I was just describing. I had this idea. So I'd been doing this radio show. And again, like, let's just put some context around this. This goes back to the early 1990s, right? Where if you and I maybe are in the similar kind of age brackets, I'm guessing, I don't know. But at the time, audio cassettes were a big deal, right? So there were famous, like Tony Robbins had an audio series. There were like lots of different audio cassettes. And it was literally cassette tapes you'd put on your tape deck, right? Mm-hmm. And so I had this idea, what if I could bundle up these interviews I'm doing with entrepreneurs and put them on like an audio cassette? Would people like subscribe to get a new cassette each month, like a magazine? Remember, my dad was a magazine, so I was trying to like merge these ideas. And I rented a studio and got all this stuff together and started pressing these audio cassettes. Well, I didn't take into consideration the cost to acquire a customer. I thought, if I just make these great interviews, like it'll grow by word of mouth, right? Well, I remember like running down into my basement where, in fact, it was my parents' basement, where there was a fax machine. Remember old fax machines? And I was taking orders on a fax machine. And I'd run down every morning at like 5:30 in the morning, trying to see how many orders I'd gotten. And like there were lots of offers for free cruises and lots of offers for like mortgage brokers, but no offers and no orders. And God, I remember how dismayed and just demotivated I was becoming over months and months about not being able to sell. I think I might have sold like less than 100 subscriptions, and like the cost to produce it was like tens of thousands of dollars. It was a totally crappy business model. Needless to say, I shut that down, learned my lesson that
advertising.
Yeah, you got to figure out what's your cost to acquire a customer, right? And can you then get lifetime value? You know, I know in the second half of the conversation, we'll talk about subscription models and stuff like that. But one of the ideas is to get a 3-to-1 LTV to CAC ratio, meaning when you're winning a subscriber, you got to make sure you're going to get 3 times more revenue from them than it costs you to acquire them. Like that's a minimum threshold to get. And I was nowhere near that. And so I've learned that now, but this goes back 30 years and it was just one of my many, many mistakes in the early days.
So unfortunately, we're about to run out of time, but before we do, give us a little sense. I know you went on to start several companies and you've sold companies, kind of the global thought around, you know, jumping in ventures and how you built momentum to carry that ball forward into additional opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, look, all the entrepreneurs that I'd interviewed started to enable me to get a bit of a sense of what the way they think and the way they react. And one of the sponsors of the show, the radio show that I'm describing, was a major bank in Canada. It's called RBC. They actually have branches in the South now as well, but it's a big Canadian bank. And RBC invited me in to start evaluating some of their marketing messages to small business owners. They're like, you're interviewing all these folks. Do you think this direct mail letter would work? Or what about this radio ad? What about this TV ad? And I started giving them advice about like, oh, you're going to sound terrible if you say that, or they're going to hate you if you do this. And that actually parlayed into another company that I started, which was a market research company that helped big companies market to small companies. And we ultimately got subscribers, IBM, Microsoft, JP Morgan Chase, Bank of America, and it was acquired years later by a publicly traded company. So that was a successful exit, but it was inspired by really just giving sort of kind of advice to big companies about how to market to small companies.
You know, I think when we come back next week, it'd be good to pick up with that thought of, how did you know to go into and how did you know when to exit from an organization? Because we have a lot of entrepreneurs that come on this show. And, you know, one of the Monday morning quarterback scenarios is that, hey, I should have made a move earlier. I should have brought in a CEO earlier. I should have sold earlier. People hang on to, you know, organizations sometimes too long. So I'd love to get some insight on how you made that mental decision to make a move on it. So unfortunately, John, we're out of time today. That was your life in 26 minutes. So we appreciate that. again, John Warlow, who is the founder and CEO of the Value Builder System out of Toronto, Canada. We appreciate your time and your story today.
It's fun to be with you both.
And again, you've been listening to Beyond the Business, heard here on 94.3 and presented by the College of Charleston School of Business and Coastal Wealth Management. And until next weekend, Low Country, have a blessed week.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Business, brought to you by the College of Charleston School of Business. The College of Charleston School of Business, where students are beyond ready to work, they're ready to make an impact. Tune in next Saturday morning at 9 for Beyond the Business, hosted by Eric Cox and Leslie Haywood, and heard exclusively on News Radio 94.3 WSC. The College of Charleston School of Business is recognized among the top 30 colleges for studying business abroad by the Business Research Guide, with 9 undergraduate majors, 10 minors, and 6 concentration areas, an honors program in business, and master's programs in business and accountancy. The College of Charleston School of Business has more than 3,000 students enrolled. Their students are ready to work, and they're ready to make an impact. For more info, visit sb.cfc.edu.